Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Radio Basics, what's going on? It must be Monday. I'm your host, Justin. I'm here with...
Kabir.
Yeah, Kabir, what's going on, man? What's good? If you weren't there, or you didn't hear about it, on Friday, May 1st, we had the sickest event, man. We had a jam down at the Steel Workers Hall. To celebrate...
ever happened in the city of Toronto?
I'd say that's a safe thing to say, man. I think it was really good, man. We had a huge gathering. A huge amount of people came out to celebrate International Workers' Day. It was ridiculous. I mean, it was Basics in conjunction with Barrio Nuevo. We had who else did we have? We had the Nepalese
FMLN
Toronto. CHRY, of course, was there holding it down. We were live to air, if you didn't hear. And if you didn't hear and you weren't there, like, I just straight up feel sorry for you. It was really sick.
Yeah.
So,
and CHRY, thankfully, the only community radio station was there.
Mm-hmm.
Reporting live from the ground, broadcasting live. Hopefully some of you heard that, at least. But yeah.
Yeah, man, it was wicked. I couldn't believe the amount of people that came out, like, that showed support. We had performers, singers, Santa Gorilla?
Santa Gorilla,
man,
yeah.
They were ridiculous. I can't get over their performance.
A bunch of those Filipino youth, right? That came up from Bayan, Canada, or Migrante.
Yeah, we had, who else did we have? We had the, those youth, those, like, those Spanish youth that came out and did, little dramatic act, which was pretty good. And,
it was, Unsung.
Unsung
our
in
very
Lawson,
own
yeah.
Unsung
yeah,
in
yeah,
Lawson.
Yeah. Yeah, who held it down? Sung. I got a props, Unsung. You're really good.
Yeah.
All right. So we got a wicked show. We got a lot of things happening. We got some news to report, obviously, which we do every week. I think right now we'll go to a track. Wanna hit up some Kanon?
Some Kanon.
Yeah.
Waving
so
flag.
You got it going?
Yeah.
All right. CHRY 105.5 Radio Basics. Yo, Radio Basics, what's going on? That's a hype song, man. That's Kanon, Waving Flags. Man, I want to play that song again.
I know.
Maybe if we get some time, you know. Okay, so we're going to do what we always do on Monday nights, good old Mondays. We're going to do the news for all those listeners out there. So we'll begin with local news. The Toronto Star reports that public housing expectations is unrealistic, says retiring CEO. Departing TCHC Toronto Community Housing CEO Derek Ballantyne said the public harbors an unrealistic expectation that his agency can serve as a care institution. The TCHC is the institution in charge of all the community housing from Regent Park to Lawrence Heights, Dawnmount. Where else, Kabir?
Well, throw Jane Finch, Connections, you know, basically any
yeah.
majority of areas of public housing in the city are all TCHC.
Right, right, right. And so the story goes on to say that there's deplorable conditions, leaking roofs, elevators that don't work, mice, roaches, bed bugs in TCHC units have been well documented in the media. In an interview yesterday, Ballantyne, who leaves his post May 15th, counters that since he took command in 2002, the agency has made, quote, significant strides to improving the condition of the housing stock, investing close to $600 million in the building repairs since then. But it's unrealistic to expect that his organization has the funding or capacity to become a, quote, care institution, Ballantyne said. Obviously pointing to the fact that they are not out to help or to care, right, but operate solely to the logic of profit, right? To making money, and that's it, right?
Yeah, which I think underlines what a lot of community activists have been saying, is that TCHC acts just like any private landlord,
mm-hmm.
Except for the fact that it's a government, you know, designated
yeah.
body that is supposed to support people. It is a social housing network. That's what, I mean, at least yeah. in my opinion, that's what social housing is supposed to do. A provider is care for people.
Yeah, yeah, you'd think so, right? Yeah. But I mean, even in Canadian history, the public corporations don't serve the interests of the public. So that's that. And the article goes on in the end to say that Ballantyne says he's leaving with no regrets. So, you know, the article says that there's just deplorable conditions. They're a huge slumlord. And Ballantyne obviously feels no remorse. All right, Boo Ballantyne. So I don't really know what else to say to that. I mean, it sort of speaks for itself. You know, Basics has been working in these communities. We do social investigation, go door to door, and ask people what's their experiences with TCHD. And most of them say, like, you know, I can't get a hold of anybody. There's no input. Two-way input between the residents and the corporation, right?
I think in Jungle, in Lawrence Heights, it was like 75% of residents surveyed said that TCHC was not a good housing provider, and that they, you know, there wasn't good conditions that they were living in.
Yeah, yeah, and instead of actually following through with what they say they're going to do and just fixing, say, just basic things, they're privatizing it, right, and selling it off to private developers who put up condos and, you know, sell it off to the wealthy, right? And they gentrify all the people. And I mean, just go down Dundas and you will see these skyscrapers being built right in the middle of Regent, you know? And obviously there's going to be increased police presence to, protect that private property. So, that's a development to watch for. And I mean, you know, if you're serious about, you know, organizing against it, get in contact with Basics.
Yep.
All right, so I'm going to go on to national news. This is going to, you know, go across the border a bit, international. It affects everyone in North America and the world mostly. Debt holders move to block Chrysler's restructuring. The London Financial Times reports that a group of Chrysler lenders asked the New York bankruptcy court on Monday to block the restructuring of the ailing Detroit carmaker, contending that the process was patently illegal. The dissident group, calling themselves the non-TARP lenders, drew President Barack Obama's ire last week after refusing to sign on to the deal under which Chrysler offered to swap $6.9 billion of secured debt for $2.25 in cash. The four banks that hold the bulk of the debt, JP Morgan, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs, accepted the offer under strong political pressure. And I guess the reason I'm reporting this is, actually, Kabir, I'm introducing a new segment today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm calling it the enemy of the people. So I think maybe every week that we should, you know, proclaim somebody the enemy of the people. And it's going to be tough to beat Ballantyne on that last one. But I think these guys, actually, I'm going big on the first one. So I am calling an enemy of the people every single corporate media press across Canada, from the Toronto Star, Toronto Sun, Globe and Mail, National Post, Ottawa Citizen, Calgary Herald, all of you just, you know, you picked on the unions. You said the unions were causing all the problems. The labor cost in a car is 7% of the total cost. And, you know, everyone pointed the finger, said you need concessions. Meanwhile, auto workers have been taking concessions since about the 70s. And you said that was the source of the problem. And now you have all the financial capitalists, the debt holders, bond holders, equity shares, forestalling the process completely, saying, you know, if you go to bankruptcy court, we're not going to get our money. We're blocking this. We're going to take you to court. And so you have all these money managers, funds, capital management, you know, forestalling the process to restructure them and make them better, even though that process is just going to make them a stronger monopoly. All those presses out there, all the mainstream press that point the fingers at the union, this article completely contradicts that, right? It shows that the media is just a tool to bash unions, just to pick on working class people, people trying to have some sort of input in the process that controls their lives, decision making, and everyone bashed them. They said, "Oh, they're lucky they have jobs." And yeah.
Lucky there is a union, you know.
Yeah, and most people saying that unions shouldn't be allowed during a time of a crisis or at all, right? And you know, the corporate media has a long, long, long history of picking on unions. And working as the propaganda arm of corporations and capital, basically, right? So
exactly, and you know, same thing, dividing workers, you know, telling us these fanciful stories about how much wages you know, auto workers make, you know, same thing during the TTC strike, you know, and in fact, inventions they you know, I think I was pointing on the last program, they just kind of added up all the benefits, you know.
Well, yeah, what happens is the actual wage of a worker, say a Chrysler, is actually $2 less than Toyota and Honda. Yep. What they're doing is they're adding things like legacy costs, like, say, retirees and widows and things, and somehow this equals $74 an hour, which is what they're pinning, what they say GM workers get. I mean, if you go to Oshawa or Windsor, they're not exactly rich towns.
Yeah.
Okay, these people aren't going around, like, they don't have huge houses and things, right? So, I mean, that should be proof enough. So, so enemy of the people, corporate press, there you go, all across Canada.
I would go further to say every media outlet except CHRY, the enemy of the people.
Yeah, truly, and maybe a handful of grassroots organizations out there that hold it down. So, all right, we're going to go to commercial, maybe play a track, and then we're going to come back with the interview. We got, who do we got coming on? Or
Definitely after the track, which is, which Faith Nolan track are we
Faith
playing?
Nolan. Faith Nolan is a Toronto...
And which track of hers are we playing?
We're playing Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. It's a live recording from, I think, a No One Is Illegal event out in BC. Right, you got that queued up?
Yes,
friend?
Definitely.
Good old Kabir?
Yes, good old Kabir. And so after the break, we got related story. We have Rowana Hepburn. She's a... Native grandmother and great-grandmother coming out of Winnipeg, and she's going to be talking about the abuse her granddaughter suffered at the hands of the Right Honorable Winnipeg Police Department over there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she's going to be coming on, and after that we have a good friend of the show, I think a good friend of anyone, any, you know, mass activist, any, you know, progressive person in Toronto, Norman Otis Richmond, coming on. To talk about well, everything, the headlines, Mumia Abu-Jamal, updates on his case. This is a long time, lifelong community activist, and he's going to be coming on for the last half hour of the show.
Sick. That should be good.
Definitely.
I'm excited. So, yep. All right. Commercial time, and see you in a bit. See you, Jarway.
Hi, my name is Tina.com is an initiative of the AIDS Committee of Toronto. It's a website for all of us about crystal methamphetamine. Whether you're using crystal meth, have never tried it, have...
You're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM.
Some energy company is every Canadian getting rich off every reservation. I'm here to save you.
Switching routes and why? What's the difference? Bullets through your ligaments and serving a long bed for crimes you never did commit. I handle my business despite how you wishing it. I am not incompetent or illiterate. I get money with the legit, the illegit. You never catch me slipping in ridiculous predicaments. I
something like that. Dead prime ministers involved, and I like that. Catch me on the strip with the ball, late night stacks. Creeping like you trying to get it all, I knife that. Younger, you won't get your life back. What's the deal, though? 15 got the mean team in the ill flow. Watching my steeds, pero lo tengo tiempo. Cats cast swagger in my jeans, either move or my tempo. Move from my ends, yo, info. Someone seem to get to the cops. Dudes on lock or dead if they on the block. Real talk. Reaching for the belt, take the steel off. Peel off for hearing police be. Rock city, dot city, pop millies, move millie. We gritty, we grimy, we gritty, we grimy. Greasy chat, easy mag, run up on them, lay them flat. We gritty, we grimy, we gritty, we grimy. Dot city, rock city, pop millies, move millie. We grimy, we gritty, we grimy, we gritty. Greasy chat, easy mag, run up on them, lay them flat. We grimy, we gritty, we grimy, we gritty. Yo, now I'm on my craziest shit. Side of your car and blow your brains out of your whip. And now the cops trying to find out who hopped in the switch. With the Glock of the fifth and blues medulla out of this shit. Lick leader, I can't be stopped. The only person I could is a hip-hop cop with a hip-hop lock. And he ain't gon' get close to me because I keep the toast always. That it getting smoked like a Philly. So try something if you think you was next. You know the high hollows that's going straight through your vest and going into your chest. And you can get fly if you want to. But them shows that have your ass crying like a funk dude. Got you slipping, I'll let you know that I'm flying. And your house rubbing stuff on your baby.
CHRY 105.5, we are back. Sorry about the delay. We had a little technical difficulty. Our guest Rowena, I don't think is going to be coming on. We couldn't get a hold of her, so...
Maybe what we'll do, we'll maybe try to call her later in the show. But basically, this was the grandmother of a young native girl, 18-year-old Stephanie Warren, who was brutally, viciously beaten by members of the Winnipeg Police Department on March 1st. And then arrested with assaulting a police officer. So, but on the line right now, we have Norman Otis Richmond, and many listeners, you guys will hopefully recognize his voice from Saturday Morning Live, the program that he did for over 20 years, hosted for over 20 years on CKLN. And maybe he'll tell you about the situation right now at that, the very depressing situation right now at that radio station. But Norman, lifelong community activist, well known to anyone, that kind of hangs around progressive events and movements in the city. Hopefully he'll be doing some more work, ongoing work with Radio Basics. And so we have him on today. What's going on, Norman?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. How about you? So to begin, Norman, actually just briefly, why don't you, do you want to give any updates or any explanation to listeners about the situation right now at CKLN?
Well, the situation at CKLN is very difficult to even talk about because there are three boards, and there's Board A, Board B, which... are basically Arno Miners, and then there is Arno Miners has a board, and they were elected last year by the vast majority of the people at CKLN. Then there is Board 2, who were a part of the what we term the illegal board. They defected from the legal board, and basically they have a working relationship with Board 1. Then there's Board 3, the illegal board. Now, the illegal board is made up of some individuals whose name I really don't want to even mention because their names have really been mentioned a lot. But I understand that they were supposedly taking Ryerson and the Ryerson Student Union to court on May the 19th, and it's my understanding that that is not going to take place. That they have basically thrown in the towel. They don't have lawyers and so on and so forth. So that there could be a merger between Board 1 and Board 2, and there's a possibility that. They can come together, but the financial situation, I think CKLN is broke. So only time will tell. That's basically all I can say at this particular point, if that made any sense.
Definitely. So there is the unfortunate possibility that this station will be closed down.
I would say that that is a possibility, but I think politically, with the will of the people, that we can continue to exist. But you know, the station has been run dogged into the ground so far. Like right now, what it is on, but is basically playing music and no commentary.
Mm-hmm. So, Norman, despite this, despite that, and unfortunately, you know, listeners across Toronto, across Canada, in fact, across the world are missing you, missing Saturday Morning Live. You are still doing work. Just last week, you organized an event around Mumia's new book, Jailhouse Lawyers. First of all, do you want to tell us a little bit about that book, this new book by Mumia Abu-Jamal, Death Row Prisoner in the United States?
Well, first of all, the book is called Jailhouse Lawyers, Prisoners Defending Prisoners versus the USA. And it is, the foreword is by Angela Davis. And it was inspired by the wife of C.L.R. James, the Caribbean revolutionary. And it essentially is a story about the jailhouse lawyers who, basically, Mumia is saying that this is the first of its type, but the jailhouse lawyers have come into existence because a lot of the street lawyers are working for the state because the situation is set up so the state is going to win either way. And mm-hmm. he is putting a lot of saying that there's a lot of great work being done by lawyers inside the jail who are self-educated. These are men and women, and that some of these lawyers are on the up and up, and they have been able to change a few things. They can't really change the system, but they can bring some relief. And he cites some examples of some prisoners that have got their death sentence, they got themselves off of death row. Some of them have got themselves even out of prison. Mm-hmm. Then he also warns about some jailhouse lawyers that are phonies. And he talks about the best of the best, you know, how these people who came, many people who come into the prisons illiterate and come out politically educated as well as literate. They learn how to defend themselves with law. They become great writers, and he gives you a lot of case stories about that. And he also warns about some of these, you know, at the same time he talks about the best of the best, some of the lawyers that have done great work. Then he talks about the worst of the worst, some of these people who are basically crooks,
yeah,
who are, you know, basically side with the state. And it's a great book. It's probably the one of a kind, and I don't know if people are going to continue, if there's going to be anybody else that's going to continue this work, but the prison industrial complex, as we know, is growing in the United States as well as Canada.
And Norman, can you explain that term when you say prison industrial complex? What you mean by that?
Well, the fact that they're the military industrial complex is armies, navies that are being built, and I'm saying that the way I'm defining prison industrial complex is that the state is building prisons to jail essentially those people that have been shut out of society. And many of these people are political people. Some of them are not political people, and those people that have chosen the crime route, many of them have chosen the crime route because they have been shut out of the system, and the prison systems are being built in order to basically keep people in check, because we know that the state, which is the, you know, the Army, Navy, the police, the courts, and so on and so forth, are an instrument of the state, and whoever controls the state runs all of those. And we working people are at the mercy of the state, be that in Canada, be that in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the prison industrial complex is growing and growing, not only in the United States but right here in Canada. I think it's Brampton that has that is putting together a super jail as we speak.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and just to add to that, in New York they have the Rockefeller drug laws, which you have mandatory sentencing up to 40 years just for having a relatively small quantity of marijuana,
which is ridiculous.
Yeah, people being locked up, and I think there's currently 12,000 people under those laws in the United States, which feeds the upstate New York economy, right?
Oh yeah,
so,
and smoking marijuana. I mean, if you're gonna let people get drunk and drink liquor,
yeah,
why not let them smoke a little herb?
Mm-hmm.
Of course,
tobacco.
I'm a teetotaler, and I don't smoke, drink, chase women or men, but. I'm a good guy, but if people want to do that, they should be allowed, I think, in terms of a little smoke. It can't hurt anyone. But I guess the reason they don't legalize it because they can't get a profit from it. Once they figure that out, I guess you can probably be able to buy marijuana, yeah, just like you buy beer, vodka, gin, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, truly. And they don't police the tobacco industry, which by far, out of any drug, kills the most people.
Oh, without a doubt.
Worldwide,
yeah,
right?
That's very dangerous. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So, Norman, just quickly coming back to Mumia Abu-Jamal, do you want to just briefly remind listeners, who this political prisoner is and basically the very unfortunate updates on his appeal for his case?
Well, Mumia Abu-Jamal turned 55 last Friday. And he joined the Black Panther Party at 14 and was arrested in the early 80s, supposedly for allegedly killing a police officer, Daniel Faulkner. And, all the evidence shows that Mumia did not, in fact, do this situation. He came into a situation where his own brother was being beaten by a police officer, and there was an altercation, and Mumia was shot and almost killed, and the gun that killed Officer Faulkner, history has proven that it wasn't even the right gun, but Mumia was convicted, and around that time he was the president of the National Association of Black Journalists, which was he was the president of the Philadelphia chapter, and he was doing radio work, and he was driving a taxi to supplement his income, and that was around in the early 80s, and he's been on death row ever since then, and he has support from President Mandela. He has the support of people in Cuba, has the support of the
French Parliament.
Anybody you name, most Bishop Tutu, a lot of progressive people, a lot of liberal people from all five continents, and he's been on death row for nearly 25 years, and apparently they're saying that they're not going to grant him a new trial, although his lawyer, Robert Bryan, is, if you listen to him speak, he feels that he can turn this situation around. But at this particular point, it looks as if the state wants to execute Mumia Abu-Jamal. They were planning to execute him in 1995, but worldwide support stopped that. And we're hoping that worldwide support will do the same thing in 2009.
Mm-hmm. So his appeal has been denied once again?
Yes.
Yeah. So unfortunately, Norman, we have to go quickly to commercial, but we'll come back after that, after the break with you again.
All right, thank you.
All right, yeah. So stay on the line. Listening to CHRY 105.5 FM Basics Radio, Kabir Justin here, and we're here with Norman Otis Richmond. Norman, still on the line?
Yes, sir.
Definitely. So, Norman, actually, jumping from Mumia's book to another very important book that has just come out, The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy by Yves Engler. Now, this is a book, one of the first books, I think, that to detail Canadian imperialism, Canadian foreign policy crimes at great length since Confederation.
How can you, there's no such thing as Canadian imperialism, you know that. Shame on you.
Who do you think you are, Kabir?
I know. Shame on me. Yeah, really. But Norman, there's going to be an event coming up May 7th here in Toronto, 7 p.m. at the Behan Center, organized by Toronto Haiti Action Committee. Norman, you're definitely going to be at that event. In fact, you got an advanced copy of the book
in the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, and it says top secret, but. This gentleman has gone back and basically traced Canadian imperialism from how the Canadian troops joined the British in the Sudan in 1885. And, you know, the fact that, you know, Canada has this image of being a peacemaker when that has not really been the case. You know, there are a lot of people that talk about how, you know, the liberal, under Paul Martin, the liberals basically turned to a from a peacekeeper to an imperial to messing with other people in Haiti, and then we blame Harper. But this book, the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, dispels that and basically documents how Canada has always been in the mix. From the beginning, you know, U.S. imperialism, I guess, started in 1889, or, you know, around that with the, you know, Cuba and Guam and the Philippines. And British imperialism, of course, was the top of the heap before that. And Canada has either been the buddy-buddy of Britain first and then the U.S. And, you know, today we see it, and everybody... When you, Kabir, you talk about Canadian imperialism, you know, a lot of people would say that's a fact, because Harper is showing Canada to be the imperialist country that they are. But a lot of us don't realize that it's not, didn't start with Harper, or didn't even start with Paul Martin, but it's from the beginning of imperialism. Canada's always been there as a junior partner, but a partner nevertheless. And this book, I have read bits and pieces. I think it's going to be it's going to be a great book, because I mean, because they talk about how Canada was involved in you know, the overthrow of Salvador Allende, how Canada has collaborated with Zionism, how Canada has been a part of the, helped the U.S. war in Vietnam. They were involved in the, they participated in the killing of Patrice Lumumba in the Congo. You guys have been working on the Haiti Action Committee, so we all know the role that Canada, I don't want to bore your listeners with what the situation with Canada is in Haiti, because I know you've been, anybody that listens to Radio Basic knows that particular situation. But this particular book, which is 100 and, let me see how many pages is it, is almost 300 pages, and a lot of great, you know, bibliography and a lot of other reading you can do. It looks like it is hit the nail on the head, and it is definitely... It's a great work, and it basically shows we don't have to talk anymore. If people read this book, this is good ammunition to show that Canada, junior partner, or whatever partner, they are definitely in the mix when it comes to imperialism. And you know, Harper is trying to he's already at the table, but he's trying to get a bigger piece of the pie. You know, and this is. evident in the role that he's playing in Israel at the moment. I mean, I think people are talking about how Canada and Israel have they're collaborating on border crossings and the intelligence. They're sharing intelligence, whereas certain people can't even get into Canada. You know, the Palestinians are people are being watched in come in and out of Canada. I think Jeff Helper. I think I'm mispronouncing his name, but he came from Israel. I think he's originally out of New York City. He did a wonderful presentation, and he talked about concretely talked about and showed slides and proved without a shadow of a doubt that Canada is in bed with Israel. And if you read any paper, the Toronto, the Globe and Mail, the Star, or any other paper, it's in there every day. I mean, Harper and Peter McKay and that whole conservative crowd are in bed with the current government of Israel. And on the Israeli country question, they may even be to the right of they're to the right of Obama, but they may have even been to the right of George W. Bush.
Yeah, and Sri Lanka too. We have Canada just announcing today the $3 million in aid to the government of Sri Lanka as it conducts its genocide, you know, against the Tamil population. And, you know, and we know this aid is not going to get to the people. The Canada actually didn't get any assurances. Didn't even get any, the government of Sri Lanka didn't even pretend to, you know, say it's going to get this aid to civilians. Canada's still giving this $3 million in aid.
Well, $3 million is, it's peanuts, but they shouldn't even be giving peanuts to, I mean, I've heard the head of the military in Sri Lanka talk about, he basically laughs at the resistance forces and, very arrogantly. I can't believe that, you know, someone in the 21st century could be that flippant about a situation that's serious.
Yeah, and I think it's even a myth to think that, you know, just voting Harper out will change things. I mean, even Ignatieff has openly wrote books on in praise of torture and the Bush administration's policies, and that book was it slips my mind right. The Lesser Evil, and even calling for a new imperialism, I think, in a New York newspaper, right?
Yes,
well,
Norman.
You have to realize that when you talk about Ignatieff, you're talking about the Count.
Yeah, truly.
And he is he has ties with some serious going back to before the Bolshevik Revolution. I mean, he had some ties with some.
Oh yeah, the Tsar, isn't it?
He has roots with the Tsarist element, so he is he's a dangerous man.
Yeah, truly.
And he's to the right of I mean, I can't figure out who it, should his name be Michael Harper or Stephen Ignatieff. I don't know. That's how I see him.
Bush Ignatieff or something. Yeah,
George Ignatieff actually.
Yeah. George, I think George would probably be a George W. Ignatieff, right?
Yeah. So I actually, you know, there's been another politician recently just finished his 100 days in office. Obama receiving a B from the what was it? Or officially that's the grade people have given him for his first 100 days in office. Norma, what do you think about that? As you know, the war in Afghanistan escalating, NATO just killing a 12-year-old girl, Afghan girl, just yesterday, and some 25 people dying today in a series of bomb attacks in Afghanistan.
Well, I think Barack Obama is put into a situation where he is one of the smartest, if not the smartest, presidents that America has ever had. He is truly an African-American president. But he is still the captain of the imperialist ship, and many things that he has done. I think he's trying his best to deal with the economic situation on the domestic front. Mm-hmm. And what little I know about economics, I really don't think he can do anything about it. But his foreign policy, frankly, I think is pretty bad.
Yeah.
I think the whole situation, the unmanned drones, the fact if he goes into if he goes into Pakistan and not Pakistan, if he goes, he's already into Pakistan, but if he does the situation with Afghanistan and goes into there, I think he's going to lose the world support. So I'm really worried about that particular situation. I really think that puts him on the wrong side of history. I think he's wrong on the Israeli question. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is deplorable that an African man who is as knowledgeable as Barack Obama, a man who came up under Reverend Jeremy Wright, would not let the United States go to the Durban 2 conference, even if they wanted to argue that to make their argument, but mm-hmm. to completely boycott it, that doesn't really look too good on President Obama and the new administration.
And Norman, wasn't one of the conditions it was about labeling Israel apartheid, but it was also about the reparations issue, reparations for slavery.
Oh, I don't even want to deal with that. Obama doesn't believe in reparations. I mean, that it's kind of deplorable that every time I say this I get into too big trouble, but I mean African people are definitely should be given reparations, but I think Koreans, I think that people in East Timor, they should be given reparations. And you could even, if you really wanted to stretch it, you could argue that you could give reparations to poor working class people in Appalachia in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
I would go that far, but I'm not putting that out. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah.
But in terms of African people, without a doubt, Native people and African people definitely have a case for reparations. I mean, African people should be getting reparations from Britain, France, Portugal, the Dutch, the Portuguese, all of Europe. The European governments, not the people, should be paying reparations to African people all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I could just throw in my thoughts on the situation, I mean, just the very fact that Obama and Hillary Clinton were running should cast light on all the struggles that went on for years, for decades, right, of civil rights movements, of women's rights movements. I mean, just the fact that they were there, regardless of what they're actually trying to do and whose interests they serve, it was only made possible by the struggles of, you know, the black population and the women's population.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, Hillary Clinton is, I think the fact that she was the wife of Bill Clinton, who is Mr. Imperialism, I think that's why Obama basically won, because Clinton got ugly in the end, but it could have, and imperialism it needs someone like Obama or Hillary Clinton, but an African man would do the job, because you couldn't sell McCain in New Delhi or Beijing. He couldn't. What would McCain look like going to trying to go to China and make a deal in India? They don't want to hear from a decrepit European man who is backward. I mean, you know, it's like we're living in a new day now, and we've had white supremacy for the last couple of centuries, and you know, McCain is not even a progressive European. Hillary might have been able to do something had she not been tied to William Jefferson Clinton, who was not, who was, in my judgment, who was an imperialist as well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, Norman, we do have to wrap up. We're just going to once again advertise the May 7th, 7 p.m. Event for the Haiti Action Committee, the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, as well as the rally going on tomorrow at 12 p.m. The, you heard about that, the human chain going on downtown Toronto for the Tamil genocide going on in Sri Lanka.
No, I didn't hear about that. I know the Tamils have been a... Have been on the street for the last couple of weeks, and university is always hopping. The U.S. consulate is always somebody there, and I think the Tamils should be commended. I mean, they definitely have made their presence felt in this particular country. I don't know, because it's maybe because of the numbers. Because I was telling people in Los Angeles and friends of mine in the United States, where you don't have such a large Tamil population, but the population in Canada has definitely made its mark, not only in Canada, but all around the world.
All around the world, exactly. And finally, Norman, we're just going to have, we're running 3 minutes over time here. And finally, just give us the quick details about your own event, the community event, the Toast and Roast being had in your honor that's coming up.
That'll be next Monday at the Train studio, and it's going to be a toast and roast, and we're going to just have some fun. And we have Clifton Joseph, Caldwell Taylor, who used to be the ambassador for Maurice Bishop during the New Jew Movement period. We have Aita Sadu. We have King Cosmos. Who has a song called Reparations. And it's going to be a light evening. You know, we're going to do a little, John Stewart, I guess, we'll do a little John Stewart type of thing, but we were doing it before John Stewart. You know, we basically, Richard Pryor used to do the roast, and this is basically, is inspired by Richard Pryor. You know, they had a roast for Richard Pryor. But I notice every time I turn on any mainstream CBC or whatever, John Stewart seems to be the most serious political commentator in North America right now, in terms of every, you turn on Andy Berry or you turn on Amy Goodman, it's like John Stewart. So we're going to do take John Stewart back, because that Richard Pryor started that kind of political satire.
Definitely. Thanks so much for being on, Norman, and people can get the details about that event going on next Monday. We'll, on the Basic site, we'll post that up. Thanks
really
so much,
Norman. I
appreciate
that. It's also on Facebook. I put up an events page, so or if you can email me, Norman, at norman.o.richmond@gmail.com, and I can send you information.
All right, Norman. Thanks so much for being on.
Thanks, Norman.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Norman Otis Richmond. This is Radio Basics. Kabir.
Justin.
Signing off.
See ya.
Close your mind. Close your eyes. See with your heart. How do you forgive the murderer of your father? The ink of a scholar is worth 1,000 times more than the blood of a mom. We came through the storm, nooses on our necks, and the smallpox blanket to keep us warm. On a 747 on the Pentagon lawn, wake up, the alarm clock is connected to a bomb. Anthrax lab on a West Virginia farm. Shorty ain't learned to walk, already heavily armed. Civilians in little